You're listening to Like Mother, Like Son on WJFF.
And that's my mother, Patricia Adams.
And that's my son, Ramsey Adams.
The show is like mother, like son?
Yes. That's right, with
really?
The question mark.
With a question mark.
You know, it's a mother-son thing.
Ramsey, this is more important than anything else coming my way today.
Okay.
To change it. You want to be a richer man.
You're listening to Like Mother, Like Son on Radio JFF. This is my mother, Patricia Adams.
And that's my son, Ramsey Adams.
We're in the studio with our producer, Mark Sutton.
Our guest today is Murmur Blakeslee. Her three books are Same Blood, In Dark Water, and In the Yikes Zone.
Welcome to Like Mother, Like Son, Murmur. It's nice to talk to you today. And I remember meeting you a number of years ago when you were a young single mother with a boy, I think he was about 4 years old, Hanson, and you came by the house, I remember, with a friend, and you looked rather stressed. You had a lot of things that you had to do, but what was immediately obvious is that you were also a writer and an artist, and you were very determined to find a place in your life for this art, and you have. But I'd like you to tell us a little bit about those early years and what it was like being a young mother and wanting so much to write.
Well, I think I've blocked them out of my mind. but actually, sometimes I look back at that time with great fondness because being a single mother is sort of like being an odd bird in this, any single parent. It's like being an odd bird in this culture. There's couples, there's singles, and then there's single parents, and they don't fit in either place. But always one ball was dropping. I either was not making enough money, or I was not spending enough time with my kid, or my writing was suffering. So I was constantly juggling, and always one ball was dropping. But I think it's always that way. I don't think it's really ever stopped.
You mean even today in your life?
Yeah, yeah. You're always too busy. There's always something. You haven't checked your emails for years.
Right. Well, it's also probably like a lot of mothers today who are not even just single mothers, but mothers who are working, trying to also raise a family, and there's just our lives have so much going on in them that that's also an aspect of it. But going on also as an artist, in your first book, Same Blood, you wrote about being a young mother, and you wrote about being a single mother, and you wrote a lot about your son, Bubby. And I was wondering if you would read maybe a passage from that about the mother and son.
Yeah, I don't think I could write this book today because I definitely use the material available to me. And a lot of people say you should never use your family as material, but I can't imagine how you could avoid it. But I'll read this to you. It's in the Hick dialect, which I didn't steal, I grew up with. My place, you can't get clean. It ain't the type. It's been old too long. You vacuum the windowsill and the paint, it come off in strips. The linoleum is the old kind in squares, and most of them is raised up on the edge, which Bubby likes because he runs his race cars along them like the streets, with square turns like in Cartsdale, where the policeman got us for Bubby not sitting in a car seat. Bubby took out his gun and shouted, "Stick 'em up!" And ever since, that policeman, he's been in one of Bubby's cars. So anyway, my floor's dirty with that kind of linoleum, nothing you can do. But it don't matter, my rooms are big and we got lots of windows, and the ones that ain't picture windows I open wide, and I sit down on the blue denim couch in my kitchen and listen to the trucks go by. Sometimes while I'm sitting there, Bubby'll say, "You be Bubby, I be Daddy," and then he talks real low. "I'm going to work," he says, and gets his red jacket on, and he gets on his horse, though he's got to keep one foot down because the springs is broken, and he says, "Cry," and I cry. He tells me everything to say, and then I call him Hitler, and he says, "I'm not Hitler, I Daddy."
Murmur, that makes me want to also talk about the fact that you do write, you called it Hick dialect, but you do write about the communities in the Catskills, and you use the dialect of the Catskills, if there can be defined such a thing. You also create an incredible atmosphere of people, hard-working people living in the mountains here in New York. And I know you grew up in Windham, so could you tell us a little bit about you write of what you know, because you did grow up in a small town in the Catskills?
Well, in a way, I write about what I know, but in a way, it's all imagination of what I think maybe is somewhere latent in my past. My grandfather was a potato farmer. He didn't read or write, and he lived with us till I was 15, and he was born in 1880, and I've never met anybody even remotely like him. He told stories constantly, and I took care of him all the time when I was young and my parents left for vacation. I would be left with my grandfather taking care of him, and he just told stories all the time. And his voice is definitely in my work. He's the only character I've ever used straight from life, although I have to say I had to tone him down a little.
So I have a question, Robert. So that's interesting. So he told stories, and you decided to become a writer and write these stories down. Is that, do you think the fact that he told stories made you want to express yourself in written word? Or why did you become a writer? Why did you write these books?
I have no choice. I didn't decide to become a writer. I was fascinated by words since I was little. I used to think words were real. They were living beings in my mind. They were like little spirits. And they, when we weren't using them, they were off playing by themselves. That's the way I've always thought. They're like seeds. They have the real thing inside them.
So how long does it take you to write a novel, Murmur?
Too long, because of the rest of my life. The first book took me 4 or 5 years.
Ouch.
Second book took 8. I threw out probably 500 words. 500 pages, I mean.
And do you wish you hadn't thrown them away now?
No. I think there's nothing worse than writing a bad book. I'd rather be slow and still like to read it.
I think that's a good idea. I mean, think of all the stuff that's out there now. I mean, there are, I don't know how many thousand novels every year just in the United States.
60,000.
60,000
in America.
A year. Every year. So, I mean, if you're a writer now, I think you owe it, you know, in a way it's sort of the stiff competition, but you kind of owe it to people to really craft the best novel you can. And if that takes a few years, I think that's fine. But, you know, people are so busy, if they buy a novel, I mean, they want to buy a good novel.
Well, you say you can't help it. You have to write. So do you have a story that you know the story, it's fully developed in your head, and you just have to then put pencil to paper, or do you use a typewriter?
I use a computer.
Oh!
You thought I was a Luddite. The other day I had to use my pencil because the electricity was out, and I was really upset. But anyway, I have to write. It's not because I know what I want to say. I just know that my son once said to me, this is after he became a teenager, he said, "I got it, Mom. To be a writer, you have to have a story to be in." And if I'm not writing, there's some part of me that's going dry. And I dry out. I'd rather not live than live on the earth without writing.
I want to go back to the fact that your writing is primarily about your not your family necessarily, but about family relationships. And I'm going to actually read from my review of your book In Dark Water, because I think what you do with a family in tragedy really is quite remarkable and very true. The notion that families become stronger or closer in the face of tragedy is usually a romantic myth. Rather than bring out the strengths of the family members, it often brings out the vulnerabilities. Florence, who is the mother in this book, plummets into depression after her son's death, and she finds her own daughter Eudora's presence such a painful reminder of this death that she becomes cruel to her. The little girl Eudora finds herself not only unable to help her mother, but feels responsible for aggravating her mother's illness. This is a pattern, I think, that is often found in families. And would you just speak to that, or how you came to that idea as you were writing?
Well, you know, that story worked through me. And this goes back to what you were saying, Ramsey, about, you know, why do you have to write? Is it something you have to say? No, it's a story that wants to be told through you. And everybody thought when I wrote this book that I must have had some family tragedy, some death in my family, and I never have. But this story had to be told through me, and I definitely use the material of my family, but I do not write autobiographically. I only steal from my life. And there is, in a work of art, you have to compress it, and you have to intensify it. And there's a lot of sickness just going around in any family. No family's functional. I think 3% are called functional. But that
What does that mean anyway? A functional family? I've never understood that.
I think the definition of a family is a bunch of dysfunctional people in the same house, and it should be that way. It's incurable. But somehow, using pressure of death and psychosis and all that brings out that in a stronger light.
You're a novelist, but you're also an extreme sports person, aren't you? Skydiver, is it? Cliff
skier.
Jumper.
I'm not an extreme skier. I just ski. Trained ski teachers all over the country. So I have been in certain extreme situations that other people would call extreme skiing. But I actually never take too many chances.
I mean, isn't there some correlation to writing these sort of dysfunctional...
No, I've kept a very strong... I've compartmentalized my life, and I've kept a very strong sword on the bed between skiing and writing.
Well, now, you have one of your books is called In the Yikes Zone.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that book for a second.
Let's see. What do you want to know? I was asked to write that book. I was told that I should write that book because I did lectures all over the country on fear. And after every one, people said, "Do you have written material?" And finally, I sat down and wrote what I learned from being 20 years working with fearful students.
Well, skiing, I think, is a scary sport. Ramsey and I didn't start skiing until Ramsey was a teenager, having grown up in the South. And I'm still terrified most of the time I ski. I do it, and I try to let go of my fear. I've even read your book. But I think it is, actually, because what you're doing in skiing is you're speeding down an icy, hard slope very, very fast. What's scary than that?
And people do die skiing. I mean, one of the Kennedys recently died. When I was in junior high school, actually, a girl on the ski team, she died in a skiing accident.
Well, let's dispel this myth right away. More people have a chance of dying on their way to the ski slope than they do of even getting hurt on a ski slope. But I just wanted to spell that right away. But skiing is a great metaphor for risk-taking because you can really control the amount of risk you want to take. And I use skiing basically as a metaphor for going into the unknown, for letting go. And I got that from writing. So actually, all the fear work I've done in skiing comes from how I deal with a blank page. So in some ways, although I've tried to keep them strictly apart in my life, they're really combined. And when I look at a blank page, I have to let go. And how do I do that? I do exactly what I do on the hill. I lower the task.
Well, I mean, one of the words that you use to describe skiing in its metaphor is surrender. And it's like the last thing I'd ever do on a ski slope is surrender to the slope because that's how I'd end up dying.
Yeah, you have to be smart. It's just like sex. And you have to surrender, but surrender selectively with some intelligence.
Let's go back. Let's get into this sex and surrender stuff here, Norma.
Skiing is perfect. Both skiing and riding are very akin to sex.
Is there a special club like the mile high
sex and riding club?
No, I didn't mean to insinuate, Ramsey, that you wouldn't be smart, but on a slope or any kind of slippery slope you're looking at, the reason skiing is so much like sex is because you do have to surrender, but you have to pick your moments, and so you can't surrender without intelligence. And I think that's just a perfect metaphor nowadays for sex. When people try to control fear and they use words like, I want to fix it, I want to manage it, I want to deal with it, they use controlling words. And yet what they're frightened of is losing control. So they're trying to attack the problem on the level of the problem. And I see the same thing with my writing students. They are very often frightened of letting go. And so,
by overexposing, you know, themselves or being out of control, or what is the fear of that blank page that you're referring to
being,
writing students?
Being stupid. Uh-huh. Your vanity, a fear is often proportionate to your vanity, and you want to write, you know, something good, something publishable. And in order to just get that little tiny voice out, you have to take away all those expectations.
Do you think everyone has it in them to be a good writer?
No.
What do you tell a student who... have you ever had a student where you said, you know, you're a very nice person, but you're not going to be a very good writer?
I've never said that. But it's just like athletes. There's some great athletes.
Right.
There's some... you know, klutzes out there. And I wouldn't tell anybody not to write because I just love the process of writing. I wouldn't tell anyone not to ski or enjoy sports, but not everybody's going to make it to the Olympics or be a great skier, and not everybody's has it in them to be a great writer.
So for the writers who aren't probably going down the published writing track, you just encourage them to get into it and enjoy the process and have fun writing. That's a good attitude.
Yeah, I try to compartmentalize that very strongly. The part of you that publishes and sends those letters out and the careerist is a whole different animal than the person who sits down and has a very sensual relationship with your computer or your paper or whatever. That's a very, very private relationship. And if you infect it with this idea of publishing and all that other, I don't want to swear, all that other stuff.
Yes, FCC regulations.
Family radio station.
Their big brother is listening to Like Mother, Like Son at all times, so we have to be very careful.
Can I sail through the took it down. I climbed the mountain, I turned around. And if you see my reflection in the snow-covered hills, landslide brought it down.
You're listening to Like Mother, Like Son, and we're talking today with Murmur Blakesley, the author of Same Blood, In Dark Water, and In the Yikes Zone. And we were earlier talking about writing and letting go and surrendering, but I want to ask you also about perhaps using your son as a character or as an idea in what you're doing and what that leads to.
Well, it's always a fine line between using material around you and exploiting the people around you. And one time I asked a psychiatrist to read my manuscript. It was In Dark Water because my mother was breaking down and showing psychotic symptoms. And I asked her, does it seem like she's really crazy? I want her to seem crazy. And she goes, oh, yeah. She seemed really crazy when she was biting the nails of her kid. And I thought, oh no, that was it? Because that came straight out of my life. That's completely autobiographical, and I rarely use straight autobiographical scenes, but I actually spent a lot of time biting my son's nails.
Do you think that some people actually have a theory that the great artists of the world come from sort of misery and unhappiness and pain, and that really in a way does create art. If you're sort of happy and things go along and you're easy to satisfy, you don't come up with that artistic urge.
Oh, that's a whammy of a question. It's a good one. I think despair is a great demon driving you to write. And I was saying I could not write Same Blood right now. My life is not as desperate as it was, mm-hmm. and it was pretty desperate then. And I really use that to feed that character. But I also feel like if you spend too much time on a desperate life, you have no time to write. Mm-hmm. So, and you always have parts of your childhood or what's going on around you to work in some hard material. It's much harder to write a happy dinner scene than to write a miserable one. So a lot of it's skill. If you can write good, happy stuff, then that takes a lot.
Because the drama is built in. If it's something right, there's no. If everyone's just happy, why?
Right.
There's a little less interest.
You have to have a conflict. And but I mean, my life is really blessed right now, and yet I'm writing one of the most depressing books that I can think of. So
what are you writing right now?
I'm writing about it takes place in the reservoir, underneath what's now the reservoir, 1930.
The Papakton.
So all these farmers, the whole communities are.
You know, Murmur, I know Hansen is your son, and he's been very important with your work. And you just told me a story about where you are with Hansen today. So as we're winding up our talk today, would you speak a little bit about Hansen as a little kid and where you are today?
Well, Hansen, in a sense, went from material to being a reader, excellent reader. He'd come home from school, grab a coffee yogurt from the icebox, come running upstairs, sit on my bed, and listen to what I had written for the day. And he always said when I was writing In Dark Water, the character of Dory was 11 years old. He said it was like having a sister in the house. The sister had moved in, and he sometimes would joke and call me a Dory wannabe. And we'd be sitting at the table, and all of a sudden he'd say, well, would Dory eat this? Well, Dory eat spinach? I don't think Dory would eat spinach. Or he'd come home from school, and I'd go, oh, Dory got in trouble today, and she's going to get kicked out of her second school. What am I going to do? And we would talk about it. Then he went to the point where he edited. I almost remember. I do remember the exact day. He was there eating his yogurt, and I read to him, and he goes, he was about 12, I think. He said, why don't you move that paragraph to back to before this other scene, and then it will work. And I was shocked. He came up with an actual solution. And then he had to do a college essay about the book that had the most impact on his life. And he started out, the book that had the most impact, I never read. And it was in Dark Water, because he said, I learned about how the forming of a book from the inside, and I never wanted to read it from the outside, because then it looked tidy and it looked like a world that was already made, but I felt the world in the making. And so anyway, he
did he get into college?
Yeah. Yes, he did.
All right, so it worked. Well, this has been a great discussion. Thank you so much for coming in. And by the way, you have a special place in Like Mother, Like Son lore, because you are our first and so far only actual in-studio guest. All our other interviews are phone interviews. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Murmur, for joining us today, and we will thank you.
Visit us online at www.likemotherlikeson.org and let us know what you think of the show.
Good night.